You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement here on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton, 34-year police veteran, author of A Cop's Life, and the founder of The Wounded Blue, the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It's like I can't figure out what I want to be when I grow up, huh? Well, a couple things before we get into the briefing room. I would like to ask you if you have a product or a service that you would like my listeners to hear about. My listenership now is about 300,000 people a week. It's heard on live talk radio as well as podcast. And if law enforcement and their supporters would be in your market, I would love for you to advertise that product on here, this network, because we have a tremendous reach, and we will do a custom commercial for you, a custom advertisement, and for a very reasonable price. Contact me at randy@thewoundedblue.org. That's randy@thewoundedblue.org, and we can have that conversation. Now, without further ado, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. You know, I have often talked on this show about what I call the war on cops. And the war on cops, as I have noted on many occasions, is far more than the physical assaults that officers face quite literally every day. Startling statistic. Each year, more than 50,000 officers a year are physically assaulted. The year before, which was the last FBI statistics available, we were at 57,000. That's an incredible number of law enforcement officers who have been physically assaulted. Now, those physical assaults are one part of the job. But the war on cops is far more insidious than that. The war on cops has been the propaganda machine that has been developed and ginned up by the media, by agenda-driven politicians, by social media activists, by those who consider themselves social justice warriors. And it has taken a tremendous toll on law enforcement in many, many ways. First of all, look at what it has done to the trust between the American people and law enforcement officers. What other profession in this entire country has a demand that your entire workday is recorded and photographed and videoed? I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it, but the reason that I think we need these monitoring devices, these video cameras, is not to protect the public from the police, but to protect the police from the public, who have become increasingly confrontational, both verbally and physically. But think about it. Think about what that means. That a position of trust of law enforcement, which is essential to the public order, has been eroded to the point where politicians and cities and community members and leaders in both government and elsewhere have called for the surveillance, if you will, of basically every police officer in the United States. That in and of itself takes a toll on an individual who is serving. Just that knowing that you are distrusted to the point where your entire workday has to be monitored. Now let's then move to the media and their portrayals of law enforcement officers when incidents occur that are dramatic. Generally speaking, they are use of force incidents, either officer-involved shootings or uses of force. There has been there has been a national narrative that began really in earnest after Ferguson, that police officers are murdering racist thugs who are out searching to the communities for young black men to kill, and are planting evidence and are dishonest thugs, you name it. And this has been played out over and over again, building on the initial great lie of Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot. Now, you would think that political leadership and civic leadership of this country would have realized that this was debunked years ago, and still we still see it. You still see references made to Michael Brown, even presidential candidates calling the police officer Darren Wilson a murderer. This insidiousness further divides our country, and the reason that it's being done is pretty clear to me, and that is because of a political agenda. When politicians grab for the low-hanging fruit of defenseless law enforcement, who they can accuse basically without any accountability of anything they want to, that gins up hatred. It gins up a unifying force, if you will, against the police. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's what they're doing effectively. You see a tremendously anti-law enforcement attitude in so many instances by the media, by politicians. I mean, can you imagine Senator Kamala Harris running for president of the United States, referring to the lawful killing of Michael Brown, who was attacking a police officer, as a murder? It's astonishing. Astonishing. This is all part of the war on cops. The changing of the laws, the decreasing of the number of laws that are on the books to give law enforcement the tools to make the public safer, are being drained away. You look at the propositions passed by California politicians on everything from narcotics offenses to vandalism to other things, where they're basically decriminalizing a tremendous amount of those laws. And then you add to that activist prosecutors in cities, major cities all over this country, who suddenly are deciding, we're not prosecuting crimes. We're not prosecuting crimes like, larceny under $750 or under $1,000. In California, you can literally steal that amount every single day, and it's only a misdemeanor crime which won't be prosecuted. So when you see basically the criminal justice system eating itself up from within, it is self-destruction. But it's all part of the war on cops. And the I guess the irony here is that the police are out there literally every single day. They are putting their lives in harm's way. They are losing their lives, being assaulted on an incredible rate. You're seeing now the diminishment of benefits being given to the officers. You're seeing all over the country, instead of an officer being allowed to retire at 25 years of service, they're increasing it to 30. They're paying them less. They're giving them less benefits. And what is this doing to law enforcement? It is eroding their morale. It is increased what I believe is a crisis about to happen. In fact, it's already happening. That crisis is the retention of law enforcement officers diminishing, the recruitment of law enforcement officers evaporating, and then the hiring of police officers because of the shrinking pool of possibility of possibles who are being hired that maybe shouldn't be hired. And this becomes the ever-increasing cycle. This is all part of the war on cops. And yet you hear nothing about it. You hear nothing about it in the media. You hear nothing about it from police leadership. Police leadership in many instances has become a political football. You see decisions being made by police leadership where they're coming out in the media and decrying their own officers for anything that might smack of a political hot potato. And this is destroying not only the morale, but it also affects the very health of the men and women who serve. It increases post-traumatic stress, injury. It decreases the job satisfaction. It decreases the number of proactive police stops. It increases the number of law enforcement officers who are just giving up on the profession. This is all part of the war on cops. And I'm telling you, I am forecasting this now, that it's going to get worse before it's going to get better. I believe that the American public, the vast majority of Americans, believe in and trust their cops. You wouldn't know that from the media. But as our cities get less safe, as politicians pander to political activism and allow the streets to be taken over by the homeless and by criminals and by drug dealers and the quality of life diminishes in our cities, you're going to begin to see the public realize that their very lives are in danger because of this political correctness on steroids. At that point, when it's going to take some horribly dramatic tragedy to bring this issue to the forefront, and it's going to be horrendous. And then the public is going to say, enough is enough. It is time for the police to be the police. It's time for law enforcement to do what they were originally hired to do. Enforce the laws. Cause accountability for crime. And put people that need to be in jail. And at that point, law enforcement will be recognized for what it is. The heroic career path. The new centurions, if you will, of our society. The protectors. And at that point, we'll begin to see the pendulum swing again. But my friends, there's going to be a lot of pain until that happens. There's going to be a lot of death. There's going to be a lot of destruction. There's going to be a lot of law enforcement officers losing their lives and a lot of members of the public doing the same. It's time to let the police be the police. Well, let's talk about a couple other things. I had to get that off my chest, okay? So while we're talking about madness and the war on cops, here is a great headline. Movement to disarm police gaining major traction. I'm going to read you a quote. It'll make you want to pull your hair out. It's in the best interest of both law enforcement and communities to implement major policy changes so that the racist institutional biases that led to the use of force against Atiana Jefferson, Tamir Rice, and so many others will never happen again. We need a country with fewer guns and more justice and safety. It's time to disarm the police. Okay. That is by someone running for another office. It is, it's, now here's something that I bet will not surprise you, that the backers of this candidate are the same backers that backed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar. His name is Jamal Bowman. He's a New York City congressional candidate endorsed by the, quote, Justice Democrats. And he has proposed taking guns away from police officers in American cities. How is it possible that a legitimate congressional candidate could take a platform like this and actually get traction on it? That is the insanity that is occurring in our times now. That a guy like this can make an outrageous campaign platform and receive support, both financial and political, to move forward as a congressional candidate. I can you imagine 10 years ago if somebody said that? They'd be laughed, right? They'd just be labeled a kook and wouldn't even be considered. And yet look at what we've got. Look at the craziness we have in people elected to positions of leadership in this country. It's incredible. I mean, the other candidates that are running against this guy at least have enough smarts even to you know, say that this guy has no credibility. But look, he's getting attention. It's just amazing. Just amazing. And then also when I talk about the war on cops, here they are in California decriminalizing everything. You know, you can defecate on the streets, you can sell drugs, you can break into cars and not receive any accountability. But here's a deputy who follows police procedure on his department and is now being charged with a felony crime. This is unbelievable. Veteran Alameda County Sheriff's deputy has pleaded not guilty to felony charges, accusing him of recording privileged conversations of suspects while attempting to follow department policy. So here's the deal. This sheriff's department's policy is when a suspect is not accompanied by an officer, their conversations are to be monitored. So they have recording equipment set up in the rooms when they're being left alone. Well, recording equipment was running. These juveniles who were under arrest for robbery were talking to their attorney. And although they didn't use anything in this against them, the police officer, detective, put it in this report because he didn't have anything to hide. He's just following policy. And what happens when the district attorney finds out? They drop the charges against these punks and they charge the cop. It's absurd. It's insane. And now this veteran police officer who's never been in trouble before is fighting for his very life. And this is the war on cops. I could go on and on, but we're running out of time and I got a great guest waiting for us in the interview room. I've got an announcement to make. It's about a new company near and dear to my heart because I'm part of it. And not only am I part of it, but this company was created to help injured and disabled law enforcement officers. This company is called Law Dog Coffee Company. That's right, Law Dog Coffee Company. Tastes so good, it ought to be illegal. Oh, yeah. Now, I got to tell you, I love coffee. I've been drinking it since I was a wee lad. And there's nothing better than sitting in a cold patrol car with a hot cup of coffee. And we have done a deal with the Costa Rican government to bring in some of the finest ethically grown coffee that is available anywhere. It is delicious. Go to LawDogCoffeeCompany.com. That's LawDogCoffeeCompany.com. Get yourself a couple bags of fantastic premium coffee. Get to me on Facebook and tell me what you think about it. Law Dog Coffee Company. Tastes so good. Ought to be illegal.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is an attorney representing law enforcement officers in Arizona. Steve Cerbalek is his name. Steve, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio.
Thanks for having me, Randy.
So I reached out to you because of a situation that is affecting police officers all over the United States, representing a Phoenix police officer, and this all revolves around social media posts and the rights of law enforcement officers. Can you go into that?
Sure. So the issue here is the constitutional rights that police officers have. It's kind of an interesting topic because how far the government can go in controlling how police officers basically talk about issues in the news. What happened is the Phoenix Police Department has a social media policy that took effect quite a long time ago, and they didn't actually really discipline anybody under that social media policy until activist group came out with this database there where they basically tried to highlight some controversial Facebook posts by law enforcement officers and agencies, including Phoenix. And this lawsuit came about because the Phoenix Police Department has now decided to move forward with the potential for some pretty significant discipline, suspensions or demotions or even termination, based off of what some of these officers are commenting on social media on their private accounts.
All right, let's dive a little deeper into this. So an activist group, I don't want to talk about their name because I don't want to highlight them, but an activist group actually spent a significant amount of time literally trolling cops' Facebook pages.
That's exactly right.
And then they mined this information and then contacted police agencies across the United States, making internal affairs complaints about them based on these social media posts.
Yeah, and the other thing that they did is they took posts out of context, right? So some of these posts, for example, the posts related to my client, Sergeant Hernandez, were from, I think, 2012 and 2013. And we have no idea about the context or the conversations. They basically just picked the posts that they wanted to highlight to basically try to say, you know, here's something that we think is concerning. And they publicized that not only to the departments, but the entire nation.
I mean, I remember when this first hit the news, a whole bunch of national media picked up on this story, denounced law enforcement officers all over the country.
They did. The accusation, which I think is ridiculous, is that this somehow means that the police officers are, you know, racist or unfit for duty. And for example, Sergeant Hernandez, there's absolutely no evidence that he is anything but a fair-minded, balanced, you know, he's a 30-year plus law enforcement officer, no accusations of bias, but that's how he's being categorized in this case.
So in every police agency or law enforcement agency has a different policy about social media, but and they also have different methodologies of investigating internal complaints. What is the situation in Phoenix with your client and there are other officers also being scrutinized in Phoenix as well, correct?
There are. And the concern that we have here is that I agree with the court's position that police officers, just like teachers or firefighters or other government employees, they have the constitutional right to contribute to the debate, to the public conversation on matters of public concern. And they have First Amendment protections when they actually do that, because we don't want the government to be able to just control what government employees talk about on their own time on matters of public concern. So the problem with Phoenix's policy, and it's the police department's policy specifically, not the city of Phoenix policy, I want to make that distinction clear for reasons we'll talk about later, but the Phoenix Police Department's policy doesn't talk about that balancing test, and it doesn't talk about the officer's First Amendment rights to contribute to those matters of public concern. So the concern is that the policy is overbroad and therefore unconstitutional.
When it comes down to these policies, this has been a topic that has been affecting law enforcement officers for a long time, and that is, don't they have the right to have an opinion? I mean, it's mind-boggling to me how many cops have lost their jobs around the United States based on a social media post.
So that's exactly right. Police officers do have the right to have an opinion, and they do have the right, the constitutionally protected right, to talk about things that are in the news. Now, that said, you can write a good social media policy. That is possible if you actually have constitutional protections in mind, because there's some content that is basically over the line. The courts have said that it doesn't really warrant the constitutional protection if you're not talking about matters of public concern. But in this case, for example, with Sergeant Hernandez, he's reposting articles about either government spending or issues that are in the news or issues about news coverage, topics that you've talked about before on your show. And now he's being potentially seriously suspended or demoted or even possibly terminated for expressing his opinion. Or actually, in this case, not even expressing his opinion, simply reposting things that he saw, saying, I think that this is something that I want to talk about with my friends and family.
When this came to your attention, you're the attorney for ASCOPS, the Arizona Police Association. Is this the first time that you have entered this particular arena of litigation when it comes down to social media and law enforcement?
This is the first time that I've done that, because this is the first time that one of our members in Arizona has actually faced significant discipline over a social media policy. So ASCOPS, the Arizona Conference of Police and Sheriffs, takes our responsibilities really seriously. We have a strong belief that we should stand up for the constitutional rights of our members, because police officers are under a ton of scrutiny, and they should be, but they also should make sure that their constitutional rights are protected. So in this case, this is actually the first time that, based off of social media posts on matters of public concern, that a department has now tried to move forward with substantial discipline. And when that happens, ASCOPS is there and lawyers like me are there to make sure that the rights of the officers are protected.
Is this the first time that the Phoenix PD has actually enforced their social media policy, to your knowledge?
From what we can tell, because we can get some comparative discipline reports, this is the first time that it's been significant discipline. So in Arizona, we have a Peace Officers Bill of Rights that was passed by the state legislature, and that provides us with some information and some disclosure requirements for departments for serious discipline. So basically anything that's a suspension or above. So it's pretty easy for us to kind of track that and to cover that as part of the legal plan. I couldn't tell you if you're talking about something as simple as maybe, you know, coaching or written reprimand at the department level. We wouldn't necessarily know about that. But as far as we can tell, this is the first time that there's been significant discipline on the table for social media posts, especially social media posts about issues that are in the news.
Have you, I know that you've done your research on this. I mean, this is a very interesting case, and I think it could have a major significant impact on law enforcement around the nation. Have there been any cases taken up to very high courts federally about the right of free speech and social media with law enforcement?
So there have been, and some of the cases are actually still working their way through the courts, but we have had courts of appeals. I believe it's the Fourth Circuit that's actually looked at a social media policy that was real broad. So you can make a social media policy too broad by saying things like, if you bring discredit on the department in your private posts, then you're facing discipline. That's essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's essentially what Phoenix's policy says. And there have been courts of appeals that have struck down language like that, saying, you've got to be kidding me. You're not protecting constitutional rights. There's no balance between the interests of the department and the interests of the employee. Therefore, you're failing the constitutional test.
So this seems to me to be a highly politically motivated campaign of retribution, if you will, against these officers. So how is it that law enforcement management of a major police department like Phoenix would take up the mantle of an activist group like this and literally be their tool for retribution?
So what I've got to tell you about is this group that you mentioned, and I kind of like what you're doing. Let's not give them their name or, you know, give them any more credit than we need to. But this group, I think their point of this group was to actually have a chilling effect, to actually stop officers from being able to contribute to the public debate. And that's really concerning, because I think that government employees, just like the rest of us, and in some cases more than the rest of us, you, for example, with your history and where you've worked on the departments, you offer a perspective on some of these social issues that I think are important for people to know about. And just because you put on a uniform during your day job, and just because you're highly regimented in what you do when you're working on the streets, that doesn't take away your right and maybe even your responsibility to be able to express your opinion or to be able to talk about issues that are in the news with your friends and family. And that's really concerning to me. And when you have a group that tries to do this on a nationwide level, like you said, gets nationwide attention, that has a serious chilling effect. I know that members of ASCOPS have contacted us and saying, look, I want to delete my social media now. I don't even want to talk about anything. And that's really scary, because we shouldn't let groups like that do that. I think it's important that we stand up for the officers' rights to actually be able to contribute to the debate.
You hit it right on the head. I think maybe the word conspiracy is a little too strong here, but it's a movement by a radical group that is taking a social issue to a point where it literally can get officers terminated for, and I saw some of these posts and memes that are harmless. How do they take a harmless, humorous meme and work this into a legitimate, well, what is seen as a legitimate internal affairs complaint?
It's definitely concerning. And, you know, Randy, since we have more time to talk about it, and since I know you're interested in diving into the issue, I want to give you a real life example from Sergeant Hernandez's case that I think once you understand it, you can see where he's coming from and you can see kind of the danger of a case like this. So he posted it looks like a meme, right? It's a combination that somebody else created, and all Sergeant Hernandez did is repost it. And it says something to the effect, and again, paraphrasing, it says, the most common name for a gang rapist in England is Mohammed. Okay? And the departments and the media covered this and said, oh my gosh, this shows that he's anti-Islam and that he's racist and all this other stuff. What they didn't recognize is that there were over 700 instances of gang rape victims in England that were going on at that time. And the actual perpetrators of these gang rapes were groups of men that were primarily of a certain descent, in that case specifically Pakistani Muslims. And this prompted a national commission in the United Kingdom to talk about, how do we address this issue? How do we deal with cultural assimilation? And the other side of the story, and this is where it gets even more interesting, is you actually had Indian and Sikh groups saying, look, we don't like the fact that these news stories are saying that these are Asian gang rapes, because it's actually not an Indian community. It's not a Sikh community. The media needs to be responsible in how they report this. So this meme that Sergeant Hernandez posted saying, hey, look, we should identify specifically what the issue is, because I think everyone can agree that gang rape of young children is terrible and something that is a matter of public concern. But what he was trying to comment on is that you can harm other people if you're not specific as to what the problem is. And yet that's being upheld by the media as saying, look, do you think that this is appropriate for him to post something like that? And if you actually have the time to understand what the debate is about, the answer is yes, that's absolutely appropriate. We shouldn't be lumping people in circumstances that they don't belong. How the media covers these issues is an incredibly important thing for us generally, and then for police officers specifically. So that's one of the examples of saying, look, you know, when you sensationalize something or you make it a media story because you want to get clicks on a, you know, 100-word story, you really can devastate people's lives when they're actually talking about issues that should concern the public as a whole.
You know, and well, I mean, we're talking a whole another ball of wax here when we're talking about the media and their war against cops, because I mean, in all reality, throughout America, we have seen a very, very biased media attacking law enforcement on many, many different issues. And so when they jump on the social activist bandwagon and they slant a story like this, it can, I mean, this officer is being held up as a racist, and it affects him and it affects his family. And the media isn't really making any attempt to get the reality of the story out.
That's exactly right. And by the way, it bears repeating. I said it before, but I can say it again. There is absolutely no evidence that Sergeant Hernandez was biased or racist in any way, shape, or form when he's putting that uniform on. And all he wanted to do, because his case is actually really interesting for this part too, for him in particular, all he wanted to do was repost things that he saw on the internet or that he saw on the news, and he wanted to spark conversations with his friends and family. He didn't even create this content. He's just saying, hey, this is interesting. And what's scary is, doesn't he have the right to do that? I mean, what if he reposted a story that was posted on your website or on, you know, the New York Times? That, does the government get to control what perspectives he can share? And then he should be, you know, held up as this person who did something wrong for simply wanting to talk about areas that were in the news. It's very concerning when the government starts to try to do things like that.
So what exactly is the department charge against him?
The department charges that he violated the social media policy because he brought disrepute to the Phoenix Police Department, which then gets kind of circular, because the question is, these posts were up again in 2012 or 2013. Didn't face any discipline at that point. It wasn't until this activist group all of a sudden publishes them that now all of a sudden there's this disrepute. So another argument that we have is Sergeant Hernandez had these posts up for years with no knowledge that what he did violated any policy, hadn't brought disrepute to anybody. Now you get this outside activist group that decides they want to make a big deal about it, and now he's facing potentially termination over that. It's crazy, which is why we're encouraged about the fact that a federal judge seems to be taking this seriously.
This is not a simple matter here. This really gets into the personal rights of a human being. And so what I find fascinating and discomforting at the same time is, okay, because this activist group who has an anti-law enforcement agenda brings this to the attention of the Phoenix Police Administration, does that in and of itself create the discredit? Is that what the point of this is?
You know, Randy, that's a great question, and I think, which is terrifying, but I think that the answer is yes. I think that had this activist group not done what they did, I think it's pretty safe to say that Sergeant Hernandez wouldn't be facing discipline up to termination at this point, and that's really scary. Because again, I want to repeat that these posts were also cherry-picked, right? So we don't know the other posts that Sergeant Hernandez had at the time. And all we have is the cherry-picked posts from an activist group, which I think it's safe to say has an agenda of one sort or another. saying, look at this guy, this is what he says on social media. And I look at that and say, are you kidding me? He was actively involved in talking about all kinds of things with his friends and family at this point. But now he's going to be judged by what a cherry-picked repost that some other group determines is racist without the acknowledgement that these issues were actually in the news at the time.
Let's go a little even further into this. Is the investigation that is being conducted by it's an internal affairs investigation, correct?
It is.
Do they have the authority to search through his entire Facebook history because of this investigation?
You know, that's an interesting question about do they have the authority. I would say maybe they didn't in this case. It's our understanding that right now the Phoenix Police Department's decision, and I guess it could change at any point in time, but I don't think that they went back and looked at I don't even know how they could. If they're going back and look at 6 or 7 years of Facebook posts, there's 3,000 officers. How would you even wrap your arms around that? It's my understanding that all they did was actually look at the posts from this activist group's database, which again, I think you're completely picking it up. That's really scary. You let an activist group decide what is potentially a violation of policy and whether somebody should be facing scrutiny for it. It's not a fair system by any means.
Trying to wrap my head around this whole thing. This is a real failure of leadership to me in the Phoenix Police Department. To me, if an administration gets a complaint like this, a specious complaint is really what this is, they don't have the guts to say, forget it, we're not investigating it. I find that offensive.
What we hope for is we hope that everybody can agree that we need to stand up for the constitutional rights of police officers. We definitely understand community concern, and community concern is something that's valid to us. But we also want to say, look, we believe that the community respects the Constitution generally. We believe that the community as a whole, I mean, many of your listeners I know, believe that it's important that we respect the constitutional rights of everyone. And what we're asking for is that level of communication and consideration and really thoughtful understanding of what this story is actually about and what the implications of this story actually are. And I'll tell you that right now there's extreme political pressure on the chief through the media and through activist groups. And that is a real thing, and that's a real problem. And that's why it's important for the public to know that this extreme political pressure is something that we have to stand up and say, look, if we support the constitutional rights of police officers, it's our job to stand up and say, let's make sure the Constitution applies to everyone.
So your client, Sergeant Hernandez, he's only one of a whole bunch of cops on the Phoenix PD that are facing internal affairs issues as a result of this, correct?
That's right.
How many other cops are involved in this?
You know, it's actually really hard to say because the activist group's database has something like 75 people that are listed in it. And the Phoenix Police Department, it's not exactly clear how many of those 75 are going to face discipline, and then if they're going to face discipline, if the discipline is going to be significant discipline. And the reason is this issue is still working its way through internal affairs, and we're actually asking the court to weigh in to say, look, this policy that doesn't have the constitutional protections for the officer needs to be, you know, stricken down. And because of that, that can cause the department to potentially wait on going forward with some of the other social media parts. But yeah, it's not just Sergeant Hernandez. And we know that there's multiple ASCOPS members that are affected by this issue.
Have you been in contact? I know that just the other day I read an account about the Philadelphia Police Department and them basically putting a whole bunch of their cops on desk duty because of this same exact issue. Are you in contact with other attorneys from around the country that are working on similar issues?
So at this point, we're focused on the issues that we have in Arizona. The reason is, as you know, we want to make sure that we get good court rulings based off of the facts that we have here, which are absolutely going to help the other organizations as these issues work through the court. So even at the preliminary hearing, the emergency hearing that we had on Friday of last week, we actually were able to talk to the judge about some other cases that he wanted us to consider that are going on in different geographic areas and basically include that in our briefing here in Arizona. And the reason is we want to make sure we have the best facts and the best legal position and the clearest understanding of these facts because we think it could affect the nationwide standards that exist. But we're fortunate because the Supreme Court has already held this issue is decades old. I don't know if you know, but the history of this is you had school districts that were trying to control what teachers talked about when they were off duty. And the Supreme Court said, that's ridiculous. We're not going to make it so that public school districts can silence even teachers from being able to express their opinions on matters of public concern. So we think the case law is actually pretty strong on our side, and we're going to do our best to apply it to the facts that we have here so that the law continues to protect government employees generally and police officers specifically.
If the policy is stricken from being legitimate, if the court rules this overbroad, you can't use it. Will that result in the dismissal of the charges against Sergeant Hernandez, or will they then rewrite the policy and charge him again?
So here in Arizona, we have, like I talked about before, the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, and that requires that any discipline action that is significant, so an 8-hour suspension or more, is supported by just cause. So if the policy is unconstitutional, which it is, then the discipline based off of the unconstitutional policy fails that just cause test. So they wouldn't, that's not to say that there might not be some other policy that might apply in certain circumstances. I can't really say. It's, you know, getting to levels of speculation that we haven't really faced yet. But as when it comes to the specific department social media policy, we would say that that wouldn't meet the standard. Now, it's interesting to note in this case too, ironically, the city of Phoenix as a whole has a constitutional social media policy because their policy specifically contemplates that City of Phoenix employees can participate in matters of public concern and do have the First Amendment rights to actually talk about and enter into that public debate. It's the department's policy that's more restrictive. It's the department's policy that doesn't have that constitutional protection. So it's the department's policy that is overbroad and unconstitutional.
That is really interesting. So the city's policy is constitutional, and the police department's is this overbroad policy, and it is in conflict with the city's policy. Wouldn't the city policy take precedence over a department of the city?
So what's interesting is the department should have its own social media policy. And if I was giving advice in this particular area, I would say maybe it could be one paragraph. So for example, the department policy should say, in addition to the city's policy, you can't talk about information related to ongoing police cases. Because I think that makes sense, right? So you have a detective who's involved in a case. You don't want that person posting about an active investigation, whereas the city's policy might not contemplate active investigations. It's not something that comes up for somebody that works in, you know, the water department. So you can have a department-specific policy that relates to department-specific issues. The problem here is the Phoenix Police Department's policy doesn't just stop there. It doesn't just talk about issues that are related to the police department. It goes way further and has no constitutional protections and tries to cover that off-duty activity and that off-duty contribution to the public debate, and that's where it definitely goes too far.
And you know, think of the resources being wasted on this nonsense. Think of the man hours, the detectives that are being tied up on investigating this large number of cops for this absurdity. I mean, it's almost like these activists threw this huge monkey wrench into the systems here of these police agencies, and these agencies just absorbed it and are being used as tools by this group.
And what's scary is I don't think it's limited to just the agencies that were listed here. So we know in Arizona, and we're monitoring closely the fact that other departments, you know, seeing the news and seeing the coverage and seeing this reaction, other departments, even if they weren't named, are now saying, well, we need to create this social media policy. And our concern, and the reason that ASCOPS is dedicated to having this lawsuit, is our concern is, are these new policies constitutional? Do these new policies that these other departments are creating that maybe don't have the understanding or the resources to know what the constitutional requirements are these new policies constitutional as well? Because unfortunately, this activist group's reach goes way beyond just the people that were specifically named. And that's scary.
You wonder where this is all leading, but it's, when I talk about the war on cops, as I often do on my, on this program and my streaming television program, I consider all of these actions to be part of the war on cops. It's not just the physical attacks. It is the social media attacks. It is the mainstream media attacks. It's politicians who get up and grandstand and call the police murderers. It's all part of the same war. And this is very, very wearing on our law enforcement officers. I mean, it's literally, they feel under siege. And that's why I find it so offensive that a police administration would take up the mantle of this nonsense and actively go against these men and women. A guy like Sergeant Hernandez devoted 30 years of his life to serving and protecting his community. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah, and I think it's really scary to the point that the government is trying to say, we don't want police officers to be able to, on their own time, on their own social media pages, we don't want them to even be able to contribute to the public debate. We don't want them to be able to talk about stories that they see on the news. I think that the job of a police officer is extremely important and stressful. And to make them not be able to engage, even in a private level, with things that they see on the news, it does isolate police officers. It makes their job more difficult. And I think that hopefully the courts are going to stand up for us. We feel really good about the preliminary hearing that we have. And hopefully we're going to be able to establish that police officers do have the rights to do that. And we're able to push back against activist groups and activist agendas.
Will there, when this is all resolved, will Sergeant Hernandez have the ability to file any type of legal action against this group?
Well, we're already filing the legal action to get the relief from the court. And depending on the discipline that comes down, we'll be able to potentially appeal it through the process in the city of Phoenix. What's really interesting, and this is kind of the other side of the debate, is that I believe that the First Amendment is important to a bunch of different levels. I think that it's important to be able to talk about this on all sides. So we'd have to look at the First Amendment group's rights, even if we don't like them, even if we think what they're doing is absolutely terrible. Because unlike certain people who want to stifle that debate, we'd have to look and say, is that constitutionally protected? And Sergeant Hernandez believes that as well. He's saying, look, I just wanted to spark conversation. I don't want to be disciplined for it. I don't want it to be the end of my career. I don't want it to besmirch my reputation going forward. I don't want this on my record. But at the same time, he recognizes that the Constitution is important for everyone, even people that we don't agree with.
Now, I think this is a fascinating topic. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show, but I also want to thank you for your unwavering support for these officers and for the fight that you've taken up here.
Randy, I got to tell you, it's a team effort, and we couldn't do it without people like you and organizations like ASCOPS and the everyday men and women that listen to the program and that are willing to contact their leaders and stand up for the rights of police officers and everything that they need to do. And ASCOPS is phenomenal as well. They're working as hard as they can on a state and even on a national level to stand up for the rights of our organization. And I'm proud to be part of that team.
That's excellent. Thanks again for taking the time to be on our show today, and this is the Voice of American Law Enforcement. There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer and you have been injured or disabled and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team, all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed over. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help the Wounded Blue. Each week here on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement, we pay homage to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. We had an unfortunate, I guess you could call it milestone, and that is the 100th law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this year so far. His name is Deputy Sheriff Jake Almendinger of the Gallatin County Sheriff's Office in Montana. Deputy Sheriff Jake Almendinger was struck and killed by his patrol car on Ferry Lake Road in the Bridger Mountain Range. He and another deputy were responding to the area to check on the welfare of a stranded motorist. Their patrol Tahoe started to slide backward on ice as they attempted to drive up an incline while looking for the motorist. Deputy Almendinger exited the vehicle as it slid but became trapped beneath it. He had served as a deputy with the Gallatin County Sheriff's for 2 years. He had previously served as a dispatcher and a search and rescue volunteer for over 8 years. He is survived by his wife, 3 children, and parents. Deputy Sheriff Jake Almendinger, Gallatin County Sheriff's Office, Montana. End of watch, Saturday, October 19th, 2019. May he rest in peace. Thanks for tuning in this week to another episode of Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement, here on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Join me on Facebook at The Voice of American Law Enforcement. If you're a Twitter, I'm at LT Randy Sutton. And always support wounded and disabled police officers by going to thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org.